Good evening. I want to thank you all for braving the weather and coming out tonight. No purpose this room has ever served is more important than that which brings myself and my able assistant, Mr. Bloomsack, to your community tonight. I assume worthy parents like yourselves have photos of your kids in your wallets, right? Could you take them out now and look at them? Fine-looking young lad. My, she's the spitting image, isn't she? You all looking carefully? Good. For those pictured before you are the designated targets of a deadly assassin. An assassin of youth. A new
technology
menace destroying our children in alarmingly increasing numbers.
Biotechnology.
Technology. An unspeakable scourge. The real public enemy number one. Creeping like a communist, it's knocking at our doors, turning all our children into hooligans and whores, voraciously devouring the way things are today. Savagely deflowering the good old USA. AIDS!
Biotechnology.
Madness.
Biotechnology.
Madness. Some of you may think I'm overreacting.
I'll say, I think you've come to the wrong town, pal. That kind of thing isn't a problem around here.
You'd be surprised how often I hear that. What makes this particular
technology
so dangerous is that there are no forbidding needles or snorting powders. And before you can say Jack Robinson, they are enslaved. But don't take my word for it. Here are the shocking, sordid facts. And judge for yourselves.
Hey kid, what's up? Do you hate having to eat those healthy vegetables? Is nutrition getting you down? Well, cheer up! Help's on the way. Say hello to GMO, genetically modified organisms. You can eat them all day. Not only will mealtimes be extra delicious, they'll also contain oodles and oodles of insect genes and fish genes. Just think of all that extra yummy goodness. But that's not all. We're irradiating everything you eat, so you'll never have to absorb a single nasty nutrient ever again. And don't forget about pesticides. Plenty of those. Yes, sir. Mm-mm. Like to know more? Well, let's take a look. Corn is a staple food used in many, many ways throughout the food industry. Growing it takes time, money, and lots of pesticides to protect the crops from bugs, vermin, and fungus. Now, some people think that pesticides made by big biotechs are harmful for humans, animals, and the environment, but that's okay. We've solved that problem. Our GM scientists are putting the pesticide right inside the crops. That's right. Isn't that amazing? The food itself will kill those pesky critters stone cold dead. Now, some people are worried about the bees dying off. Busy bees pollinate billions of dollars worth of crops, vegetables, fruit, flowers, you name it. But some insects are just plain greedy. They'll eat everything in sight if you don't watch out. GMO to the rescue! Thanks to genetic engineering, the plant produces a toxin from the newly inserted bacterium gene. The toxin kills insects, but not humans. The Bacillus thuringiensis toxin destroys the insect's stomachs. Ouch. We have absolutely no testing results to prove that these are safe, but they are. Trust us. We care. And because the pesticides are already growing right inside the crop, GM plants can withstand more weed killer than the old-fashioned organic crops. No weeds, no bugs. More food, more profit. What's not to like? But that GMO goodness isn't just about corn. There's rice, soybeans, cotton, alfalfa, soybeans, papaya, soybeans, oilseed rape. Is that all? Not on your life. GM is the gift that keeps on giving. The possibilities are endless. Just imagine you're a limey Brit trying to grow strawberries in the frozen wastes of Scotland land. Well, in the future, why not insert a gene from a codfish who's built to thrive in the icy North Atlantic? Result, frost-resistant strawberries. Wow, I want it now.
I am a strawberry that glows in the dark. I am a beacon to be eaten when I light up the glass house. They put a special gene in me, and now I'm luminescent when I'm ripe, fluorescent when the time is right for you to pick me, eat me. Everybody loves me. I'm the biggest strawberry you've ever really seen. I go from green to glow to red to dead. I'm GMO, and I'm the best now. I am a fish with only one eye. I'm a cyclops swimmer. I'm genetically modified. My swollen genes swim around in my bloodstream so they can see what happens to me. I'll never be free to swim around in the sea or to breed, because scientifically I've been specifically designed so they can analyze the changes in my brain and maybe help someone someday. I'm diced up, spliced up, and specially enhanced. I'm better than ever. I'm technologically advanced. I'm genetically, synthetically, however it pleases thee to see me. I can be however you need me. Diced up, spliced up, and specially enhanced. I'm better than ever. I'm technologically advanced. I'm genetically, synthetically, however it pleases thee to see me. I can be however you need me.
The effects of GMO food on humans aren't as tried and tested as we'd like, but there are much more important things that need our attention right away. The population is exploding. How will we feed everyone? We need food security, and we need it now. But just because tests on rats eating genetically modified potatoes showed them growing slower after two or three generations and developing fertility problems, oh, and some organ development issues, some goody-two-shoes scientists and whiny campaigners worry that that might happen to humans too. Well, let's wait and see. In the meantime, the biotech companies can rake in the profits that will fund more exciting GMO experiments. We love farms. We love them so much, we want them all. We want to persuade every potential partner farmer to forget all about that silly organic farming and get with us on the GMO bandwagon. Whenever we change the natural gene sequence of any plant, we get a patent, ASAP. It's our invention, after all. Hey, the new GMO plants are our intellectual property. We aim to achieve total control of the seed. Got an organic farm nearby? Great! Soon, everything you grow will be enhanced by the altered genes from our GM crops. Isn't nature wonderful? And what better way to spread the GMO goodness around than the wind? Accidental cross-pollination isn't our problem, and it's no excuse for profit loss. And once our genes get into your crops belong to us. Yep, well, it's our technology. If you're going to use it, you've got to pay. We don't care how it got there. When we own the food, we will own life. So those naughty farmers better not save their seeds for next year's crop. If they do, we'll know. We'll tie up farmers for years in the courts. Farmers will just have to buy more seeds next year, and more pesticides, too. It's win-win all around. If you want to fight us, we might just take your farm as a settlement. But we're human. Just... thanks, Mother Nature, but we'll take it from here. But we're doing all this for you, Johnny. Don't forget that. And if it's all too much for you to take in, don't worry. we've got it all figured out. By the time you're a teenager, it'll be GMO a go-go. We just need to make sure that our army of lobbyists keep GMO labeling off any products. Why spoil consumers with unnecessary choices after all? And if old Farmer Joe decides to fight us, we have a ready-made network waiting to take care of him. Can you say revolving door? Yep. Some judges used to be lawyers who worked for us, and we make sure that they take care of business. And legislation? No problem either. Former GM industry lawyers also work for the food regulation bodies, and we have enough cash in our pockets to lobby any issues all the way to Saturn and back. Some people still think government food regulatory bodies are serving their needs. Hilarious. We are making a killing in India. Literally, hundreds of thousands of farmers have been organically recycled to dodge debts that they owe us. BT cotton doesn't always give strong yields, and bollworm, cotton's main pest, seems to be gaining resistance to our transgenic BT cotton. This can mean bad crops and no revenue for some. We say, once you're in, you're in. However, under Indian law, any debts die with the farmers, so farmer suicides stop debts being passed on to any remaining family. But I'm confident that we can lobby that issue too. When we own all of the cotton varieties, and we will, suicides will be of little concern, because we'll be the only cottonseed suppliers. Duh! Concerns have been raised in Europe over problems with GMO pig feed causing sterilization and growth problems, but we have years of marketing left before that's proved, and we'll find a way to work with the Danish pig farmers banging that drum. So eat up your veggies, Johnny. There's going to be plenty for everyone for the right price.
But the great day was coming, the day of new causes. New profit, new hope.
Have the organic labeling, organic definition changed to include genetic engineering, cloned animals, irradiated meat, and sewage sludge as organic fertilizer. The USDA got the reaction to that was 20 times larger than it ever had to any other USDA proposal, and they backed off. And they backed off, though, with Monsanto saying, pull back. This is on the Internet. You can find it. Telling them to pull back, they would come at it in another way. They'd come at it later. Mm-hmm. And they certainly are coming at it now, later, and more cleverly, because now they're coming at it as a, not just as a fake label, but as a food safety issue. The whole thing that everything is being taken over.
If fast food wasn't disgusting, but it is. So instead I'll get some produce. But I've heard rumors that it ain't what it used to be. Mm-hmm.
USDA, the industrials and the industrial side, the agribusiness, the major corporations, Monsanto, mm-hmm. Cargill, ADM, the big surveillance companies that are behind this, the food safety, also part of the food safety stuff, because there's a fortune to be made and insisting that every animal in the country be tagged, every farm animal in the country, and there are 33 species, or 36, I'm not sure, be tagged with a global tracking tag, even though they're already tagged. All the tagging is already done. All of it already exists. But if the government imposes this, there's millions and millions to be made in it.
You don't know how long I've wanted to know just where my food comes from. You don't know how long I've waited to tell anybody who supports Monsanto that they're dumb. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Bill Gates, you fracking douche. But I've kept my mouth shut as long as I could. Sitting back while they destroy all the food in the whole friggin' world. Not really much of an exaggeration.
I recently spoke with Dr. Neil Carman. Dr. Carman has a PhD in the biological sciences, sits on the genetic engineering committee for the Sierra Club, and is a co-founder of the SayNoToGMOs.org website. I reached Dr. Carman in Austin, Texas, and I asked him what regulations are in place for labeling GM foods in the United States.
There is no labeling. There's no labeling required by the FDA in the United States because the companies don't want it. And, of course, my argument is that if these foods, these genetically modified foods are so great, why not put the label on them so people can say, hey, I want to try that. But, you know, for some reason, it's kind of like putting a radioactive label on something that, you know, the biotech industry has said, well, we don't want that labeled. And so, you know, why do they fear having these foods labeled? Is there some concern about, effects like allergies that might appear? I think they know that there's potential human health hazards associated with these novel foods. And as long as you don't label, there is no way you can trace any health effects back through the food system because there's no labeling. If you're eating some genetically engineered crop ingredient in a food and it causes an allergic reaction, it's virtually impossible to prove that it might be due to genetic engineering of the crop because there's no traceability in a label. If you try to contact the food store where you got it, they're not going to know. If you'd have to go back literally to the farmers growing it, and they may not necessarily know where, you know, all of their crops end up in the food supply. So, you know, there's a great deal of ignorance. So the biotech industry likes to say in public and debates and so forth that I participated in that there's not any evidence of health effects to people eating these foods. Well, the reason there's no evidence is you cannot do a study. You cannot do a health study, a symptom survey, an epidemiological study, because without traceability, without labeling and full disclosure, you cannot do a study unless you do it, you know, in a laboratory or in a controlled situation.
And which agency or office would be in charge of regulating the labeling laws?
Well, it's really the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. And at this point, they're kind of in the pockets of the biotech industry and not, you know, encouraging or requiring any labeling.
Till now, we didn't know how food was grown. Nobody wants to eat GMO.
So when you transfer a gene horizontally from one species to another, you alter completely the context within which that gene finds itself. And we simply haven't had the time to work out what the basic principles are when we do this lateral transfer. All of our concepts of the inheritance of genes and the behavior of genes is based on the study within a species. You cross a male and a female, you look at their offspring, cross them, and you follow down in a vertical fashion within a species. Now we do it horizontally, and there geneticists make what I believe is a fundamental mistake. They assume that the principles governing heredity vertically are going to apply equally horizontally. There's simply no reason to make that assumption. The ecological consequences of the transgenic organisms, I think, are immense. And geneticists ought to know better than to rush all of these out into the field as soon as possible. Now, in Canada, we've gone far too far. This has been slipped into the food stream. There are over 40 different GMOs already in our diets. We have no labeling. There has been no public discussion about this. And my position is, at the very, very least, there should be mandatory labels. Why? We learned very expensively that research experiments were done with members of the general public in the 50s and 60s without their being informed and without their getting consent. And we know today that informed consent is an absolute minimum before people become a part of any kind of experiment. We are part of an experiment with no informed consent. Thank you.
Here I come now. I'm a new virus. I used to be a strain that caused encephalitis. They cut me up and made me into a mutant, and now I am no longer a human pollutant. I have additions and I'm carrying the tools to fight cancers in the body, cause they're bending the rules. So I'm cool, man. No need to be afraid anymore. Except they're not 100% sure of all the damage and the side effects I could cause if I broke out to infect you and yours. And as a virus, I can really open doors in the human body. I'm free to explore. I'm diced up, spliced up, and specially enhanced. I'm better than ever. I'm technologically advanced. I'm genetically, synthetically, however it pleases thee to see me. I can be however you need me. Diced up, spliced up, and specially enhanced. I'm better than ever. I'm technologically advanced. I'm genetically, synthetically, however it pleases thee to see me. I can be however you need me.
Jeremy Rifkin is a Washington-based lawyer. He established the Foundation on Economic Trends, a think tank which examines the impact of technology on the way we live. His latest book is called The Biotechnology Century. He doesn't think there's anything natural about biotechnology.
You know, many people have said to me, well, Jeremy, why are you alarmed? We have been domesticating and breeding and tampering and tinkering with nature since the dawn of the Neolithic Revolution in agriculture more than 10,000 years ago. Isn't this new technology just a more sophisticated version of the kind of breeding work we've always done? The answer is absolutely no. What we have here is a radical new technology that allows us to bypass species boundaries. We've always been able to bypass some species boundaries amongst creatures that are closely related. You can cross a donkey and a horse and get a mule, but you can't cross a donkey and a dandelion or a carrot or an apple and get a damn thing in nature. With this new recombinant DNA technology, the species is no longer the organizational unit. This whole experiment is the most dangerous intervention into the earth since the dawn of history. There's nothing comparable to this.
You know, over the years I've been working on these technology issues, I think behind a lot of this, they'll talk to you about utility, and we'll talk a little about that later. But I think there's something I call the technological imagination, and I think we have to face it front up, which is, I think there is a romance about breaking limits. You know, there's an AT&T commercial that says, imagine a world without limits, where everything is possible. And I think for much of the last century, we've engaged, not always consciously, in the creating of this imaginary world where there are no limits, where everything is possible. And so when we see a car breaking the sound barrier, or we see a gigantic mouse with human genes, or we see somebody walking on the moon, which also turned out to have very little utility. But the point was, we'd broken a barrier. We had confirmed the propaganda of the technological imagination that that's what we're about as a community. That's what we're about as the human community. To create a world without limits, where anything is possible. And I think if there's one lesson that we should get when we look at genetic engineering and the breaking of species boundaries the way they are, is that we need a new romance of limits. We need to understand what makes anything lovable, anything understandable is limits. You can't even play a game without limits. You can't have good relationships without limits. And we certainly can't have a good relationship with the natural world without a deep understanding of limits. But this is a very graphic demonstration of the technological imagination at work. This is not really so much an act of science as one of imagination, in my view.
I am the most powerful rice in the land, and I can stop the famine at hand. I am part of a global plan to give natural nutrition a hand. I have been enriched with beta carotene, otherwise known as vitamin A, and I'm here right now to save the day, to help the children play. Cause without this addition, little kids are going blind, cause they're vitamin deficient and their food is not sufficient, and they're not in a position to be changing their diet. So they introduce me into their climate. See, with a nip and a tuck, you can really save the day, and with a little bit of luck, there'll be no problem with the change. So don't fall prey to the propaganda. With all this stuff, we can give ourselves a hand up the evolutionary ladder. We can engineer ourselves to be bigger and badder and quicker and smarter and different and harder. We can really live life right in everlasting line, line, line. I'm diced up, spliced up, and specially enhanced. I'm better than ever. I'm technologically advanced. I'm genetically, synthetically, however it pleases thee to see me. I can be however you need me. Diced up, spliced up, and specially enhanced. I'm better than ever. I'm technologically advanced. I'm genetically, synthetically, however it pleases thee to see me. I can be however you need me.
The word engineering conjures up images of roads and bridges and buildings designed and constructed to precise specifications. But genetic engineering is based on trial and error rather than on precision. For instance, if I wanted to insert a gene from a fruit fly into a daffodil, I can't pluck out just that gene and set it down in its new home exactly where I want it to go. In fact, some geneticists actually use a kind of gun to shoot the genes into cells, and they never know exactly where they will end up. Christine von Weizsäcker is a molecular biologist. She's president of a German environmental group called ECOROPA. She thinks biotechnology is anything but precise, and that makes it dangerous.
These genes, they are taken out with pincers, but they are thrown like sand on a piece of paper. You can't decide where the gene will end up. So let's say you have a favorite poem, and the genes of plants and animals and humans, they work together in such a consistent and forged way as a good poem. Now, if you say, I have a favorite poem, but one of the words that I really like is lacking from that poem, so you cut out the word from somewhere else and say, I want to insert it into that poem. Now, what genetic engineering allows you is to make 50 copies of the word, let's say, love or wind or flower, 50 copies, and you throw them on the page of your favorite poem. Now, what are the chances that you really have a better poem? And it even may be that that piece of word obliterates one of the words that are essential to the poem, or that they come into a completely different context, like you wanted love included in the poem, and all of a sudden it reads, there is no love, because it's contextualized. So there is no control over the genetic context in the gene, nor over the environmental context.
More than 90% of corn, canola, cotton, and soy are GMO. Oh no, oh boy. Animal studies show infertility, organ damage, gastrointestinal disorders, the list gets out of hand. When a scientist discovers problems, tries to speak up, he gets fired, ridiculed, or threatened, demand it's effed up. Normally, a farmer gathers the seeds that appear over the course of the season to plant the following year. But these biotech demons have tricked farmers into believing when they sob the dotted line, the crops will have a higher yielding, but that's been disproven. Come on, it's all lies. The GMOs only raise the use of pesticides, and now the farmer's legally bound to have to purchase from the same jerks year in and year out. They patented the genes and the seeds. It ain't supposed to be allowed. How would you prevent food monopolies? The planting of GMOs is banned in many countries, and many more have made labeling them mandatory. Right now, we have no laws in this ridiculous nation, and while they control the food, they control the population. Right now, the food and safety czar of our FDA is, guess what? A former Monsanto employee. But not all is lost, man. We still have hope. Because how you spend your dollar is your strongest vote. If you stop buying products with this crap in it, they'll have no choice but to replace those ingredients with a non-genetically modified version, otherwise known as actual food. 3, 4. For all the time, foods have been naturally grown. I'm here to give the finger to Monsanto. Oops, GMOs, they should chew you to the bone. Avoid them and tell everyone you know. Nobody wants to eat GMOs. So
in order to create its GMOs, Monsanto breaks the species barrier using a Roundup-resistant gene harvested from a bacterium. This gene is placed on microscopic particles of gold, which are fired into the soybean cells with a gene gun. The gene penetrates the DNA and creates a protein, making the plant resistant to Roundup. When the herbicide is sprayed on the crop, it kills all the weeds, leaving the soybean plants intact. One must admit that the process is an incredible technological feat. But these soybeans engineered to withstand such a powerful herbicide are destined for our dinner plates. They must have been thoroughly tested before being put on the market. Who was the Secretary of Agriculture at the time? Dan Glickman, Bill Clinton's Ag Secretary from 1995 to 2000.
What I found in the early years I was involved in the regulation of biotechnology, that there was a general feeling in agribusiness and inside our government in the U.S. that if you weren't marching lockstep forward in favor of rapid approvals of biotech products, rapid approvals of GMO crops, then somehow you were anti-science and anti-progress. Well, I think that, frankly, there were a lot of folks in industrial agriculture who didn't want as much analysis as probably we should have had because they had made a huge amount of investments in the product. I mean, I think that, and certainly when I became secretary, given the fact that I was in charge of the department regulating agriculture, I had a lot of pressure on me not to push the issue too far, so to speak. But I would say even when I opened my mouth in the Clinton administration, I got slapped around a little bit by not only the industry, but also some of the people even in the administration. In fact, I made a speech once saying that we needed to be more, we needed more thoughtfully think through the regulatory issues on GMOs. And I had some people within the Clinton administration, particularly in the U.S. trade area, that were very upset with me. They said, how could you in agriculture be questioning our regulatory regime?
In a nutshell, in the United States, the Secretary of Agriculture doesn't stand a chance against the multinationals. But just how are GMOs regulated in the United States? The most crucial policy on the subject was published by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which is legally responsible for regulating the safety of food and medicine. Title: Foods Derived from New Plant Varieties. Date: May 29, 1992. Principle 1. Foods derived from genetic modification are regulated within the existing framework that applied to foods developed by traditional plant breeding. Obviously, the FDA decided not to create a special category for GMOs. For further information, contact James Mariansky, who headed the biotechnology department at the time.
Basically, the government had taken a decision that it would not create new laws, that it felt there were already sufficient laws in place that had enough authority for the agencies to deal with new technologies.
That means the White House asked the agency to write a policy where GMOs should not be submitted to a specific regulatory regime, but it's not based on scientific data. It's a political decision?
Yes, it was a political decision. It was a very broad decision that didn't apply to just foods. It applied to all products of biotechnology.
Unbelievable. James Mariansky admits that GMO regulation was based on politics rather than science. How exactly did they justify their decision? Principle 2. The components of food as a result of genetic modification of a plant will be the same as or substantially similar to substances commonly found in food. In other words, the FDA considers that a genetically modified plant is equivalent to its conventional counterpart. What they call the principle of substantial equivalence has been adopted around the world, and it's at the heart of the debate between biotech supporters and GMO foes.
How could the FDA decide that a GMO crop is the same as a conventional plant?
What we do know is that the genes that are being introduced currently, to date, using biotechnology, produce proteins that are very similar to proteins that we've consumed for many centuries.
That's the FDA's official position on the matter, which was toppled by Jeffrey Smith, author of several books on GMOs. Michael Hansen, scientific expert for the Consumers Union of the United States. And writer Jeremy Rifkin, who was the first to denounce the principle of substantial equivalence.
The reason why GM crops are here is based on a deception that occurred in the FDA. They said that these foods are not different. They use the word substantially equivalent. They use the word not meaningfully or uniformly different. And what that turned into was a terminology called generally recognized as safe, or GRAS. Typically, if something is to be considered generally recognized as safe, it needs lots of peer-reviewed published studies and an overwhelming consensus among the scientific community. With GM crops, they had neither.
What FDA was saying was if you introduce a gene into a plant, that gene is DNA, and we've consumed DNA. We have a long history of consuming DNA, and we can establish that that is GRAS.
We were trying to say that these things should be considered food additives. When you want to put a new coloring agent in a food, the tiniest bit of coloring agent or a preservative or some other tiny chemical, that's considered a food additive, and you have to go through all these procedures to show it's that it meets the criterion of reasonable certainty of no harm. But when you genetically engineer a food which can cause untold differences in that plant, they don't require anything.
Here in Washington, if you were to have an evening and go out and get a drink at one of the local haunts where all the lobbyists hang out, everybody would laugh about this. They all know this was a joke, this substantial equivalency. This was simply a way to paper over the need for these companies, especially Monsanto, to move their products into the environment quickly with the least amount of government interference. And I should say they were very, very good at getting their interest expressed.
I remember meetings that we had where the Monsanto scientists met with the FDA scientists, and they went through the kinds of modifications that they were making and how those were being done. And basically what they were also saying to FDA is, how will these products be regulated?
I have never seen a situation where one company could have so much overwhelming influence at the highest levels of regulatory decision making as the example of Monsanto with its GM food policy in the government.
Young man who was doing his doctoral thesis at Oregon State University just doesn't seem like a real good research design, testing in sterile soils. I'm going to look at the effect in living soils. Because, you know, living soils, and here's something most of us didn't know, living soils aren't dirt. And they're not just like a bunch of microorganisms. They're like a tiny little community. You know those little ant farms they used to give kids in the 50s? They're kind of like that a billion times over. So Michael looked at the effect of this thing in living soils. I told this to a farmer. He just laughed. He said, why did they do it in sterile soils? What would you learn from that? Well, but when it was tested in living soils, it turned out that at least in one of those soils, every plant that was ever put in the soil with Klebsiella died. This is a bad happening. You don't want plants you're putting in soils to die.
The question is, why did they die? Well, most plants get their nourishment with the help of organisms called mycorrhizal fungi. The fungi live just below the surface of the soil and help make nutrients available to the plant roots. When the genetically engineered Klebsiella was introduced into the living soils, it interfered with this process in a variety of ways, or killed the fungi outright. Beth Burrows.
These are fungus in the soil that are absolutely necessary for every plant to take up nutrients. If there ain't no mycorrhizal fungi, there ain't no good eating, and those plants never grow. And without plants, you don't get animals. And without animals, there's none of us either. So it's one of those sort of real small things that we didn't learn about, at least I didn't when I was in school, that's absolutely critical. So if we're now adding something into a soil that kills that, we're essentially cutting our own throats. And if we test in sterile soils, we'll never know because there's no mycorrhizal fungi in a sterile soil.
It's so easy to be carried away by a wonderful idea, especially one that can make a lot of money. But it's also easy to forget that the living world is far more complex than we know.
The thing to think about these microorganisms, especially Klebsiella, the one I'm talking about, is they're alive. And like you and I, they move around, they change, and they reproduce themselves. And even if they didn't move very far, and even if they weren't very reproductive, it would be scary. Because, you know, a funny thing happens on farmers' fields. Birds land and put their feet on soil and pick up all kinds of things from the surface of the soil. And then they get up and they fly off. And they take what they touched with them, as do tractors, as do the feet of farmers, as do passers-by, as do cars, as do particles, just dirt particles that fly into the air. You can't contain it. So if I decide I'm going to have Klebsiella in my field, I've made a decision for my neighbor as well. And I might have made a decision for the guy in the next county. And if we get really good birds, I might have made a decision for all America. And I mean North America, and who knows, maybe even South America. You never know, because fields have mice. Things happen. Now, if that young man hadn't looked at non-sterile soils. Klebsiella might be on the market today as this wonderful ecological product that would turn crop waste into an energy source.
The genetically engineered Klebsiella could have ended all plant life on this continent. The implications of this one single case are nothing short of terrifying. And there are literally thousands of independent biotech labs around the world industriously developing new living creatures for commercial exploitation without adequate testing.
GMO a go-go.
I think because human beings have such poor judgment, we get ourselves time and time again into a corner environmentally and ecologically that we're putting the planet at risk. We're putting the future of our society at risk, and we're putting the future generations at risk. So since sometimes the wisdom of humans doesn't prevail in large scale, I think sometimes we need to look to the animals, the animal kingdom, to learn some lessons. And I'd like to share a very brief story about the wisdom of squirrels, elk, deer, raccoons, and mice. For years, a retired Iowa farmer fed squirrels on his farm through the winter months by placing corn cobs in feeders. One year, just for the heck of it, he decided to see if the squirrels had a preference for BT corn or natural corn. He put natural corn in one feeder and BT corn in another, about 20 feet away. The squirrels ate all the corn off the natural cobs but didn't touch the BT corn. The farmer dutifully refilled the feeder with more natural corn, and sure enough, it was soon gone. The BT corn, however, remained untouched. BT corn is the corn in which that has been gene spliced with a pesticide, a naturally occurring pesticide, but in its unnatural form, of course, it has questionable results. The retired farmer got curious. What if the BT variety was the squirrel's only choice? To find out, he didn't refill the natural corn. At the time, Iowa was plunged into the coldest days of winter, but day after day, the BT corn cob remained intact. The squirrels went elsewhere for their food. After about 10 days, the squirrels ate about an inch of the tip of an ear, but that's all. The farmer felt sorry for the squirrels and put natural corn back into the feeders, which the squirrels once again consumed. Now, this is another story about an elk. A captive elk escaped and took up residence in our crops of organic corn and soy. It had total access to the neighboring fields of GM crops, but they never went into them. Susan and Mark Fitzgerald in Minnesota. So I'll just one more story. Writer Steve Sprinkle described a herd of about 40 deer that ate from a field of organic soybeans, but not the Roundup Ready variety across the road. Likewise, raccoons devoured organic corn, but didn't touch an ear of BT corn growing down the road. Even the mice will move on down the line if given an alternative to those crops. So I shared that from Seeds of Deception, which is an excellent book.
And they found that the genes that were inserted into soybeans transferred into the DNA of the bacteria living inside us, and certain varieties of genetically modified corn are engineered to produce an insecticide living inside us.
I'm looking at the food that's in the grocery store. They say it's safe, everybody eat more. On second thought, I don't really know. It was made with those GMOs. So I'm looking for the non-GMO label. Before I bring it home, I put it on the table. I wanna know if it's verified, so I don't harm myself with genetically modified.
They don't want you to know.
Poison the grow.
Profits
the show.
From the GMOs.
Seeds that they sow.
Gonna hurt us, we know.
Told them to go.
Say GMO, no.
Jorge Galeano leads a small farmers organization which is fighting against the progression of what he calls the green desert.
I
What we have here is an example of a GM extension of soybeans. In fact, it's a monocrop that destroys everything in its path. Before here, there were fields containing everything that a family needed to live. Plants, trees, manioc, corn.
Do you think that a GM crop can coexist with the crops of the small farmers?
No, we are sure it can't. There are two incompatible models that can't coexist. It's a silent war that eliminates communities and families of small farmers. In addition, it destroys the biodiversity of the countryside. It brings death, poverty, and illness, as well as the destruction of the natural resources that help us live.
Today, Roundup is sprayed all over Paraguay by plane or mechanical spreaders driven by unprotected farm workers. The herbicide is sprayed right up to people's front doors or near the subsistence crops of small farmers. Every year, crops are destroyed and thousands of people contaminated.
Why would we label genetically engineered food?
It's not my business if it's harming anyone. That's for the FDA to regulate.
Good thing the food and safety czar of the FDA is our former vice president and now oversees all GMO policy. Imagine that.
You believe GMOs are unsafe?
Why are there still organic farms left in this country? Do I have to tell you how to do your job?
What are you, some sort of FDA scientist? Oh.
It's exactly the same as regular food, so we don't need to label it or do any safety testing, but patent it because it's completely different and we want to own and control it.
I want you to spend millions of dollars convincing people that labeling is expensive.
Safety testing. Yeah, right.
Monopolize all of the crops in the entire world.
I'd feed it to my own children. Or the neighbor's kids.
I want you to put the DNA of the bacteria inside the DNA of the food. What could go wrong?
Is it any of their business that we have altered the DNA structure of the food they eat by inserting unpredictable bacteria and virus DNA into the most commonly used crops? I mean, come on. Is that something they think they deserve to know?
Another state's considering labeling GMOs. Can we just threaten to sue them?
We cannot let Americans know that 49 countries have labeling laws or ban GMOs completely.
93% of Canadian pregnant women who are tested had our genetically engineered BT toxin pesticide in their blood.
Safety testing. Interesting. No.
This is appalling! Why is the other 7% eating our product?
If they knew that the European Union and even China had labeling laws,
just lie to people and tell them it'll cost a lot of money to label GMOs.
If it looks the same and smells the same, it is the same.
Time to smear California's GMO labeling proposition.
We'll confuse people, you know, into thinking that we're actually on their side and not the greedy, corporate, irresponsible douchebags that we actually are. Ugh, this is what it's doing in the animal studies.
Safety testing?
Good thing we don't serve GMO food in the cafeterias in our building, right? Right? Without them, how would we get these millions of hard-earned tax dollars in the form of government subsidies, which we then use to make risky, untested food science experiments to try on them, like lab rats?
Hey, Phyllis, can you buzz me when we take over the entire world's food supply? I'd like to celebrate that.
It is so much fun monopolizing the world's food supply! Ah!
Safety testing?
What are you even saying? Is that English? Safety testing! What? That is outrageous. That is funny. That is funny. Hey! Mother Nature! F*** you.
I don't wanna eat poison. I don't want gene mutations at my dinner reservations. It's a food abomination. What they're doing to this fast food nation. They take artificial gene combinations, inject them in seed variations so they can grow their frankenfood imitations while the side effects cause medical patients. Keep the profits alive while they're spraying all the food with name brand herbicides. And all the while they're spreading their lies. Monsanto destroying farmers' lives. And the FDA just keeps it all going, saying it's safe even though they all know it's just poison, stealing away your life. And that's what you eat, genetically modified.
If they don't want you,
they don't want you to know.
Poison
they grow.
Profits
they show. GMO? No. Seeds that they sow. Gonna hurt us, we know. Told them to go. Say GMO? No.
might create allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. Allergies, toxins, toxins. And I said, no testing necessary. No testing necessary.
GMO safety, huh? That's a corporate myth. If you don't believe me, listen to Jeffrey Smith. He's the man with the plan, gonna do what he can to help us all get those GMOs banned. But we need you to lend a hand, take a stand against this food stand. It's a mission for the health condition worldwide, cause we don't wanna live genetically modified.
No testing necessary. No
testing necessary.
Living inside of us. No testing necessary. No
testing necessary.
Living inside
of us. Unless you know what's in it. Don't believe the propaganda, the press will spin it. Affects everybody, we all up in it. Stand up to Monsanto, tell him, oh no you didn't. Reject Franken Foods in the store. Demand honest labels so we can be informed. We have a natural right to know what we buying. Just say no to GMO. Before our farms start dying. Just say no to GMO. These corporate crooks are lying. Just say no to GMO. This time we're not complying. Just say no to GMO. Just not buying it. Just say no to GMO.
No testing necessary. No insecticide.
Just say no to GMO.
No testing necessary. No insecticide.
Just say no to GMO.